There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword LoveSport.
Spurs spanked but badly beaten by Bayern. A little bit of up, little bit of down, fellas. In Frank Lampard's very own words, it's been a sobering 7 days for Chelsea as they remain in pole position for a Champions League spot next term, but stare an exit from that very competition in this. We'll be getting into all of that. We'll be looking ahead to the clash with Bournemouth on Saturday. We might even give a glance to the newly announced Premier League Hall of Fame later in the show. It's the Chelsea Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast, and a nod of appreciation from Jonathan Kidd.
News to me, but yeah, hello everybody.
Hello. And back, bigger, better than ever, it's the Stamford Chidge.
Return of the Chidge.
Return of the Chidge.
It's really good to be back, man. And do you know what? When, I mean, I know I've been completely away, and I know I've done a few with Skype, but it's like listening to your own funeral.
You've done your time, haven't you, Chidge?
It's awful. Don't do it, mate. It's, if you know, because I'm normally here and part of it all. If I kind of come in on,
I like the eye contact. I like looking at you. I like that look of hatred you,
know
you give
the,
me.
You know where the punch is coming from.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Exactly. I know.
Supposedly
it's good to be back.
Hidden under the table normally.
Well, gents, we're going to start with the bad news and then go into the good news. I like the way we're formatting this evening's show, because it was a sobering night at Stamford Bridge earlier on this week. Of course, a 3-0 reverse at the hands of Bayern Munich. Serge Gnabry, AL. They did look incredibly, incredibly good. Stamford Chidge.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, Matt, for 45 minutes, we rode our luck and we were in the game. Same old story, not good enough to finish it. Bayern were a bit unlucky, but we were in the game. I mean, I remember I turned over, there was a mate, because I get, you know, I get moved on a Champions League night.
Yes.
I get exiled from the Matthew Harding upper, and I was in the shed upper, and there was a mate of mine who normally sits in the Matthew, and I kind of waved to him, and he looked at me, thumbs up at half time. I was like, yeah, this is okay, we're doing all right. 3 minutes in the second half, all over, boom. Aspie slips, opens up the space, Rudiger's rubbish. And
Rudy's not looking.
Unbelievable. But two very well-worked clinical goals. The Jonathan and I talked about it afterwards, didn't we? The thing that impressed
you talked about it, I slumped.
That, yeah, made a change, didn't it? There is actually video evidence of me actually being able to talk on our show. But, you know,
and I slowly just fell out of shot.
Yeah, I know. You were not happy, though. You were sad. But we were talking about the pace down their left-hand side.
Phenomenal.
Alphonse.
Phenomenal.
Alphonse Gnabry. Davies. Yeah,
oh,
incredible.
My God.
Wow.
Yeah. They just motor. They reminded me of City. A German version of City. They had so much possession against us, Matt.
But also the pressing as well was absolutely magnificent.
Really good team.
And what a fit team as well. And that chap Flick appears to have restored it to what it was. Hair Flick, yes.
Hair Flick.
Yes. Ah, flicking my
not
hair.
Not that kind
moment.
Of hair Flick.
Oh, not that? Okay. Right. No. Everybody at home, I did a kind of, as if I had a long piece of hair.
Hair
face.
Flick.
Yeah, hair Flick. But yeah, it was depressing beyond belief.
Was it really depressing? Because I hear what you're saying. In terms of the first half, it was almost a case, if you have a go, we'll have a go. It was kind of ends away.
We gave them a go. Well, they did the same things as they'd just done all season, which is... And also Mount was found out for pace. I'm a little bit disappointed with that. He kept getting ahead and was always overtaking. It made you just think, are the fitness levels completely different?
Is that not more a testament to the pace that Alphonso Davies has rather than
not only him, but it was the other players. It wasn't just him. It was the others as well. I just
Alabar.
They were a cool unit, weren't they?
But I know you, and I know you're prone to despondency after
drubbings.
No, you're prone to despondency after Chelsea beating somebody 8-0, mate. But the reality is, and we did talk about this, and I think this is a very salient point, that the thing that really was disappointing, Matt, was not that Chelsea were rubbish or Frank's a rubbish manager. What is disappointing was the just basically the wake-up call that it is. It just made me realise how far away we are from being competitive in the Champions League's latter stages again. I mean, before 2014, we'd reached something like 4 semi-finals and a quarter-final and a final, and won it in 2012. You realise that we haven't won a knockout game in the Champions League since 2014, which is the year we got knocked out of the semi-final by
Atletico.
Now, here's the thing. Do you realise that in that team that got knocked out by Atletico Madrid in 2014, we had Petr Cech, John Terry, Gary Cahill, David Luiz, Frank Lampard, Aspilicueta, Willian, Torres, Hazard played in the second leg. The only one that was missing of the greatest ever Chelsea team for 10 years was Didier Drogba. Who have we got in the team now? How has that happened in the last 6 years that we've suddenly got a load of players who are either not good enough or never will be good enough or never were good enough? That's what the realisation was for me.
Yeah, and you explained that to me and I agreed with you.
You did?
I did, despite not really paying any attention.
It's because I was sober.
Because I was crying at the time.
You were not a happy man.
Well, he did say, didn't he, Frank, outclassed in pretty much every department. Said it was quite sobering, a reality check. We're going to come back to this in a moment, but we do have a caller with us now. Ray wants to talk about the redevelopment of Stamford Bridge. Hello, Ray.
Hi there. Hello, guys.
Great to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. What I wanted to say was that I know that... it's quite controversial, this business of whether they go through with this redevelopment of Stamford Bridge. I mean, personally, I think they should just kind of stay as it is, or perhaps just redevelop the shed end a little bit or something like that. But if they can't do that, I know you were talking the other day on the podcast about the to attract bigger players and to match the bigger teams with bigger stadiums like Arsenal and Spurs and that, they would need a bigger capacity. So what I was thinking was that if that's the case, then really and truly, I think they should pull out all the stops to get this Earls Court deal going. I know it'd be a shame to leave the bridge, but it seems to me that looking at about the plans that they've got for the bridge, and it's a very difficult ground to develop the way it is. Plus, this terrible thing about having to move away maybe for 4 years to Wembley or wherever, which I think would be an absolute disaster. At least if it was at Earls Court, they could carry on playing at the bridge until it's done and then move straight in. If that's the case, I know that it's not clear whether or not Earls Court is available, but if it is, if they can get that move, I think that would be the right thing, even though it's a shame to leave the bridge after all these years.
Hello, Ray. Good to hear from you again.
And you.
Nice to hear from you. It's a real thorny issue, isn't it? And I actually do think it. And I'm not deliberately trying to swing it back into what we were talking about Bayern, but it is relevant because it seeds into my point about how far away we are as a club, I think, from getting back to where we were pre-2014. The whole landscape has changed dramatically. The rise of the super rich clubs like PSG and Man City, the Barcelonas and Real Madrids are always getting richer and richer and richer. FFP has seriously constrained our ability. I mean, right now, Chelsea would probably need to spend $500 million on players to get back to where they were. I mean, Pep Guardiola said in 2015 that we needed to buy 10 quality players. We now realise how right he probably was. Now, all that is going ahead as well in the landscape of a stadium that can only fit in 42,000 people. So Spurs are now coining $100 million a year in terms of an uplift in their match day revenue, which we can't do. So I think you're right, Ray. I think a really hard decision needs to be taken, which is what kind of a football club do we want to be? Do we want to be Arsenal and finish fourth every year and then get knocked out in the round of 16? Or do we want to be competing for European titles like we were for 10 years? And to do that, a lot needs to change. You know, better players and certainly probably a bigger stadium to be able to compete or at least try and catch up with these much bigger clubs. And I don't know the answer, Ray.
They can't develop the shed end at all. Well, it's impossible.
I cannot see.
Because well, here's not allowed to because of the dwellings.
No, exactly. But that the current plans for the stadium rebuild at Stamford Bridge will lift the capacity by 20,000, but only 10,000 fans.
Yeah.
I always felt that the £1 billion that it would now cost, it just makes it completely uneconomic or not viable to do that. It just makes no sense. And Ray, absolutely bang on, by the way, mate, plus the 4 years that we'd have to be at Wembley and you would lose half the fan base. I know this for a fact. You know, the Trust used to survey this year upon year upon year upon year, and the number of people that said, well, they just jack it in, is about 50%.
So you would hope that that Earl's Court, if it was still available, which is there
are rumours, but I've heard that there's no will on the part of the owners. Well, no, it's the council that are now involved, because I think it's the Capita Group have pulled out of the big development there.
Right.
That's why these rumours have started, but I don't think there's any will on the council side to do a deal with that, from what I understand.
So Ray, just to come back to you on this, what I'm going to pick up on what Chidge has said there in terms of Spurs coining it in at the moment. Do you think that there is a direct correlation between having a bigger stadium and then earning success? Because I suppose you can look at Arsenal, perhaps. You know, moving to the Emirates in 2006, took them a good, 9 years to get another trophy, maybe slightly less than that in the FA Cup, and that was the FA Cup. Yes, they then won two successive FA Cups. But does moving into a swanky new stadium instantly mean that success is going to come?
Well, no, that's what worries me. I'm not sure it does, because the amount of money that it costs, you know, how long would it take with the extra capacity of the stadium to get that money back? You know, we've talked, you know, I don't know how many, about £500 million or whatever it is. How long would it take, you know, with the extra few thousand? And also, it's been said many times that the majority of the money now comes in from TV rights rather than the gate receipts. So, you know, and the other worry is, you know, I hate to say it, but would we fill a stadium 60-odd thousand every week?
Only if we're playing in the Champions League, Ray.
Yeah.
That's the reality. I mean, there is a counter-argument to all of this, which I think you're alluding to, Ray, and you're dead right. Right now, If you Google Deloitte's Football Money League, it'll tell you exactly what the proportions are. But we only get 15% of our total revenue from what they call match day income. So that's ticket sales and whatever you make on a match day. You know, most of the revenue does come from broadcast and the remainder comes from commercial. But that's still considerably higher than match day revenue. So you could argue that you could just stay at the stadium and plow the money that you would have otherwise put into a new stadium into the playing staff. But of course, the trouble that we have is that we're bankrolled by Raymond, and FFP will prohibit us from spending, as I said, the £500 million that I think they probably need to spend to get a team that were at the kind of levels that we saw, you know, before 2014. But it's a real conundrum, Ray. The reason I'm sounding a bit more lucid than I normally do on anything, let alone this matter, is I've just written my latest Football London piece on this very issue and that kind of conundrum. But it is a conundrum.
Ray, thanks very much for calling in.
Really, thank you, Ray. Perfect.
And a great topic as well. Yeah, I'm really torn on this, fellas.
Me too, Matt.
I mean, we've often spoken back in the heady fans forum days, Chidge, on a Sunday afternoon about tradition.
I remember those days.
And the romanticism of football. And listen, Stamford Bridge has been redeveloped already numerous times, of course, since back in the day.
Exactly.
We talk about
the only bit that's there still is the East Stand, and that was new in 1973.
Where I sit.
Where you sit. The posh seats.
But in terms of that new stadium, I'm very much a stickler for tradition, and, you know, I think Stamford Bridge is a great stadium. And you've seen what Spurs have done. Yes, listen, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, by all accounts, is one of the greatest stadiums in the world of football now.
It is.
But
they still need to call it the toilet bowl, though.
And it doesn't look like that'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? That doesn't look like they're going to win anything this season just yet.
No.
Don't look like they're going to win anything too soon. We've seen with Arsenal, and I just fear that suddenly Chelsea lose a bit of the identity by moving to a new ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing we didn't mention was the CPO, Jonathan.
That issue. What do you do about that? Yes, which is the Chelsea pitch owners who own the surrounding, not only the ground, they own the surrounding.
They own the footprint.
Yeah,
they've missed a marketing trick there.
Go on,
free CPO. with Anthony Davis advertising it.
On that note, I think we might move on. Okay. Cheers. A lovely way to finish.
Tumbleweed.
But no, it was good. Can I link something in when you have the moment?
Yes.
No, just that they're talking at the moment. The response on social media has been that there are 8 to 10 players that will be axed, was the word that was used, in the summer because they've all been so dreadful this year. And I'm just intrigued by this knee-jerk response, which Frank actually was mentioned on his press conference today, said that there are all these rumours are completely ridiculous. And yet, you could see them selling several or letting some of them go.
I want to talk about this.
Let's talk about this after.
Yeah, I'm interested to know who these 8 to 10 players will be as well. This is the Chelsea Fan Show. We've got those 8 to 10 players coming up.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabe Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabe sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquids simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's a Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Boodle, with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast, Jonathan Kidd and Stamford Chidge. Now, kiddo, you teased us before the...
He's the king of the teaser, mate. You know
such
that.
Such a tease.
He is.
Leapt into action just there. 8 to 10 players apparently set for the axe.
The axe. That was the word that was used. The axe.
That's not enough, Matt.
And this is a knee jerk. Surely.
No, I said it, but apparently so did Frank. Said Frank today at the presser said it was a knee jerk. But if you think about it, how many players have come to of course he is. How many players have come to the end of their contracts? Pedro,
do you want to do a head count?
Yes, do a head count.
Go on, off you go.
Giroud.
William.
William was actually, there was an interview with a Brazilian TV channel. Did you see it?
He
wants 3 years. Well, if that's deliberately a contract breaker, because they're never going to give him, he'd be 35.
Get more for murder these days.
Yes, he would. William will be off, so that's 3. Emerson wanted to go before Christmas, that's 4.
Drink water.
We
got to clear the.
Are we clearing all the?
Bakayoko.
Maratta. That's. But some of them are going to get money
let's
for.
Let's make it easier.
How about some of the others? Kepa.
Let's stick with the ones that are actually in the team.
In Chelsea at the moment.
Otherwise, we'll be here for two hours, Matt.
Yeah.
This is the extent of the problem, mate.
Yeah, the problem, yeah.
Well,
Miazga, Hector. They've still got these players.
Marco van Ginkel, he's still
there. He's still there, he is.
Babaraman.
Yeah, Babaraman. They've still got Babaraman.
So. Listen, this
Hang on, let's go through the other ones.
This is all coming from...
quickly.
Okay, go on. So we've beaten Spurs and now we've lost against Bayern Munich. It does feel like after the euphoria of last weekend to the sorrow of midweek, suddenly it's like, that's it, we're not good enough, we've got to get rid of a load of players.
It's true because...
But this was true at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Well, and also, he managed to stretch his resources with a way of playing, a tactic that he's now failed to duplicate.
He's been found out by a very, very, very good side.
In this instance, but also I think in the Premier League as well. Everybody else is... Well, it's the lowest total probably they will ever achieve if anybody
Chelsea
gets...
Chelsea won the league in 1955 with the lowest total ever.
53 points.
Yeah. But they still won the league.
All right. Yeah, but excuse me. We're talking about the 1953 side.
There,
I was there in spirit.
You were there in person.
So, gents, 8 to 10 players.
Let's try and figure this out.
So, actually, let's go through them. So, if you can tot up,
this is not talking about the loan. The ones out on loan.
But there's still
money to be had from them.
Absolutely.
You know, like Morata's 50 million. They're going to get some of that back. They haven't paid for that yet. Atletico apparently was terrible during the week. But perhaps they might throw him back at Chelsea. That would be an interesting thing, wouldn't it?
So we've got players currently in the side. Of those Rabiot's out of contract, of course. William, we don't know what's happening then. We've got Pedro, we've got Giroud, we've got Van Ginkel, I mentioned.
He's one of the other ones. We've got Kepa as a possibility that he might go and be swapped, isn't that the case? In that case, Chidge?
For Oblak.
I was looking at, for Oblak, that's right. There's. Chidge's phone's gone off. There's Alonso. There's Alonso, who Frank doesn't rate, and he only seems to be able to play in the 3-5-2-1 setup. He can't play in a normal four, though he played okay actually during the week, weirdly, and he was fantastic against Spurs, but Spurs lost 7-2 to them, so is that the level? Emerson wanted to go before Christmas, doesn't he? Trying to get back to Italy, doesn't enjoy the food and the weather, which they normally don't in these instances. How many have we got there?
Well, this is it, right? So what I'm keen to know is are there any big, because these aren't surprises to me right now.
Marcus Alonso, not a surprise. None of them are surprises.
Willie, not a surprise.
We knew this, as I said at the beginning of the season. The biggest issue, really, we were having a quick chat about this, weren't we, in the break. The bigger problem is that, yes, we all know that there is a lot of dead weight in the club. It's all due to some very poor purchases and legacies of constant managerial changes over the last 6 years at least. It will take 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 transfer windows to get in, to get those players out, to get new players of decent enough quality in, because you cannot go and sign, the 10 to 15 players that we're talking about.
So as a Chelsea fan,
because none of the youth are getting touched, they're obviously staying.
Are you then prepared to go, do you know what, in Frank we trust, in the system we trust, let's give it 5 years and see where we are?
Yeah, I think the board will as well,
Well, the board have to, because they're the ones that are responsible and culpable for the situation that we're in. That's the point.
Yeah. Well, it depends how low the fortunes go, of course. If they're possibly going to be relegated, I suspect that even Frank wouldn't start. They wouldn't stand by Frank for that.
But that's way. I mean, that's not going to happen, is it? Listen, realistic. Chelsea are not going to go down.
I really don't think so. I think what this year has proved fundamentally, and this is really important, actually, JK, not least because I've only just thought of it. But what this season has proved is that we can compete in the Premier League just about. We thought at the beginning of the season, it might be mid-table, might be a bit touch and go.
We're lucky if we get 10th.
We genuinely thought that.
Yeah.
What this season has proved is that even with a load of has-been and past-it players and youngsters, we are still good enough to get top 10.
But is that because of the state of the Premier League
at the moment? It could be, but we are. That's the fact. But we are not good enough to compete in the latter stages of the Champions League.
Yeah.
We're a Europa League level team, effectively.
But I'd actually also like to suggest there has been a deterioration in the way this team have played this year.
Yeah, but that's inevitable.
Well, no, but
it was even inevitable.
I'm as combobulated as you are. Is that because against Ajax, the two performances were far superior to the one that we saw during the week. So you wonder what has actually occurred, whether they've just exhausted they're not playing the tactics. I mean, from a pressing point of view, I was so intrigued by the way that they hunted in packs, the Bayern players, and we just occasionally, Mount once again tried his best to be the one person doing the pressing, but they just sat back and you thought, this is not the team that we started
this year
with. Are you a team player?
Or are you an individual in a team?
I'm both.
You can't be both. I'm a man and I'm a woman. You might as well have said that.
There is an element here, and you mentioned being in the top four, gents. Not since match day 8 have Chelsea been lower than fourth spot. So regardless of what else is happening in the Premier League, that's very impressive.
That's
you came up against the Bayern side, who have recorded the best ever record in
a group stage of the Champions League in Champions League history.
There is a stat as well I saw this week in terms of mental fatigue, mental tiredness, that Chelsea outscore, I think, any other team in the Premier League so far this season in those 15-minute slots up until the final half an hour, 50 minutes of games.
How interesting.
So it's something to do perhaps with that concentration towards the end of those 90 minutes.
And this was inevitable that this would happen to Chelsea this season, because this is one of the issues you have with youngsters. None of these youngsters have played in the Premier League. It is incredibly demanding mentally and physically, and they are not used to it. So we always knew that their performance would drop off anyway. We always thought that it might be inconsistent because youngsters are. The other issue is some of the more experienced players are getting older. Aspie's legs are going. right?
Yes,
Giroud
yes.
can't play two matches
yes,
in a row.
Yes,
Alonso, you know, he never
poor
had much
man,
pace.
No.
But, you know, so there's a lot of players in there who are getting past their best and are feeling it more. So I am not surprised that Chelsea's performance is dropping off towards the end of the season because the youngsters are not used to it and the old ones can't cope with that anymore.
And I think as well, the game in midweek is... Listen, you have to kind of look at the positives, and I fully believe that's what Frank Lampard will do. But in terms of it being a defining result in his early tenure so far, he can look at that and go, do you know what? Okay, things need to change. Much like when Chelsea spanked Arsene Wenger on his 1,000th
yeah.
game, I think it was. Was it 6-0 or something? That was a defining moment in a different sense, and it was a case of, right, Arsene, it's time to go. And he hung on for a few more seasons when he should have left after that for me. That was a defining, that's it. That's the change of the tide at Arsenal. With Chelsea, I think this is very much a case of, okay, we've been humbled, really, at the hands of a brilliant
that's
Bayern Munich team.
That's a very good word for it, yeah.
And we're not up to it, so now we look at what we do from
here
on.
Yeah, but also you would hope that the players would learn from that and go, well, this is really what we've got to aspire to. And Frank will be telling him that at the moment and saying, look, you know, I, with a few tweaks, I can make this team as good as that one.
But there is a decision to be made here by the club. They have to want this. If they want to get back to where we were before 2014, it's going to take huge cojones, a lot of patience, a lot of money, a lot of time.
Does it have
some
to?
Blooming
does
good
Roman
players.
Have to be involved in this?
Well, of course he does, because he's already.
I know
he
always is. I know last
year,
but you wonder whether he's losing interest.
Well, he's going
to
have to
he's
want
gonna
it.
He's going to have to want it
because if they don't, if on the other hand, Matt, and this is my fear about the arsenification of Chelsea, if on the other hand they work out as a business plan and a business model, they still make as much money in all the areas they make money from by the club finishing fourth and getting knocked out of the round of 16. Then, you know, all hope is over,
my
mate.
Season ticket's gone up 3%.
Well, my season ticket will be going in the bin if that happens. Because that's not what I want.
Okay.
It's business over football. Forget it.
Well, let's very quickly, because I don't think we can let the show pass. We're going to move on, of course, to the game with Bournemouth. We're going to look at the Premier League Hall of Fame as well and just get some ideas of what you guys think should be added
to... Well, Jonathan should be in it for a start.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. But we can't let the show pass
with my rattle.
Without mentioning the game with Spurs last weekend, because
brilliant.
This was Jose Mourinho, of course, and quite a comprehensive victory over Jose Mourinho. First Chelsea team to do a double over a Jose Mourinho side.
Well, no, first to any team. No team that he has managed before has done
the
double over Mourinho. And remember, he's managed more than Chelsea. Yeah? You with me?
Oh, it's not just that no team has ever done the double over him.
It's the
team that he's managed before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, fair play to Frank. I mean, what was lovely about that, Matt, because we talked about it a little bit, didn't we, on the show the other week, that Leipzig had played the same system that Chelsea had against Tottenham when we beart Tottenham up at White Hart Lane. And I wondered whether we would do the same again. And lo and behold, he digs out, you know, he basically like Dracula, wakes
Alonso up
out of his crypt, brings him on to play,
plays...
I mean, my God, Matt, that Alonso goal was like Carlos Alberto.
Lovely.
It was just
phenomenal.
Beautiful. I had such a good... I'm sitting right behind
him. He played out
beautiful
of his skin, though, Alonso,
he
in
did.
That game.
He
that
did.
Right-footed volley he almost scored, but then he hit the bar with a free kick.
Yeah.
Then he made you think...
Should have had a hat-trick.
Perhaps he should just play up
well,
front.
I wonder if maybe that, you know... The thing about it is that we look better defensively with three at the back and we look better going forward.
Yeah, well, perhaps you'll play that tomorrow.
You know, the two, but I thought Mount and Barkley playing behind Giroud.
Mount was much better.
Brilliant.
Barkley actually looked a decent player, which he didn't during the week, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, he was men against boys in that Bayern match.
I thought it was men against not very good men.
Yeah. But, I mean, it seemed to get the best out of what they had. But what is remarkable, I mean, here's the thing, Matt. We talked about this on Monday, didn't we? And again on Tuesday. We weren't sure. Were we really, really good or were Spurs just absolutely rubbish?
I think that you were far superior than Spurs. I think it was a classic case of Jose Mourinho actually typically having an excuse straight away and going, we've got no fit strikers. It's a terrible situation
so he chucked
for
it
us.
In.
But yeah, absolutely. Chucked it in.
Wow.
Set his stall out in a classic way that Jose Mourinho would. Didn't take the game to Chelsea at all. And if we're going
than,
on...
than Mora, who did a kind of couple of shots.
Yeah, but I mean...
He's a decent player,
He's a decent Mora. Player, but a couple of shots that you'd expect decent striker to get away, especially with the players backing him up as well. I thought they were very fortunate that it was 2-1 at the end of the day and they might have even nicked a draw. I mean, a long way off. But I think that Mourinho had given up before. He'd even started the game.
Wow.
It's possible. I think he's done that before. He's done that with United. Do you think he was trying to tell Levy something about what was whether he does that? Because he then made his same statement about saying, "I'm afraid I haven't got the players."
You know, well, that's
was
fine,
he just
but,
making
but,
a statement about Son and Kane?
But he had a January transfer window. Yeah, he knew that Harry Kane was going to be out. He didn't bring anyone in. He has got an opportunity now to bring in a free agent if he really wants to.
Tried to buy Giroud, didn't
they? To get Giroud in. Who, by the way, what's that, 14 goals in 14 starts for Olivier Giroud?
And he was superb against Spurs. I mean, you know, he's the thing about Oli Giroud. I mean, there had actually been quite a clamour, and you'll know this having done this show, but there had been quite a clamour to get him involved if Abraham's not fit, because Michy Batshuayi is pony, mate. He's absolutely awful.
Well, he's good for 10 minutes.
He's
isn't
a lovely lad, but he's not a footballer. He's not a footballer. So, you know, it was great to see Giroud start. I've always liked Oli Giroud. I remember his debut. Well, it might have been his debut goals. It was down at Southampton. I was down there for that. And we were 2-1 down and absolutely awful. And he came on. And he just turned the whole thing around. And he was so up for it and so pumped up. He's a proper old pro, passionate about the game, really up for it. And he's skillful. Mm. He holds the ball up.
His goal was actually a terrific striker's goal, wasn't it? Just one touch, bam, straight into
lovely.
The...
Lovely, great finish.
Yeah, great finish. Yeah.
I mean, his goal against his lot the other day was great, apart from the fact his size 11 was offside, but what a great header.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a very good player, isn't he? He's a good striker. We know that he can do a job and he might be called into action tomorrow against Bournemouth because Tammy is indeed out.
Yeah.
We're going to get into that next on the Chelsea Fan Show.
We've all got one and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
Chelsea Fan Show, me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast. Jonathan Kidd and Stamford Chidge returning
evening.
To the show. Delighted to have him here, of course. Now, gents, it is Bournemouth up next, and there are a whole bunch of classic football coincidences going into this one. Now, not a coincidence, but two defeats on the bounce to Bournemouth, of course, in the Premier League, hoping to avoid a third. Now, lost 3-0 in the week to Bayern Munich, the last team to win 3-0 at Stamford Bridge. Bournemouth in January 2018. Now, that was followed by a 4-1 defeat at Watford when Teemu Bakayoko was sent off, and he was the last player to be sent off prior to this midweek's game against Bayern Munich with Marcus Alonso going off. So a few connections there, but ultimately a big game against Bournemouth, a team desperate to avoid relegation from the Premier League. Chidge, what do you think Frank is going to do? Because we know there are injuries. Pulisic still out, N'Golo Kante still out. We spoke about Tammy, he's out. Callum Hudson-Odoi out as well. Ruben Loftus-Cheek back in training.
As Harry Redknapp was saying, down to bare bones, Jonathan. Which we are. I mean, this is the other. There is a mitigation, isn't it? Funny how everybody, even us, you know, we should know better. We leap on narratives, but nobody's mentioned how much we're struggling with injuries at the moment. And actually, perhaps possibly to Frank's credit, he doesn't ever use that as an excuse. But we are struggling. Look, here's the question: if Oli Giroud can play another 90 minutes, having played, how much did he play on
70?
Played 70 against Bayern. How much did he play against Spurs?
80.
So, you know, it's touch and go, isn't it? It might be Batshuayi starting. I really do worry whether actually Giroud's got it in him to play.
He was very tired,
you know,
in
more
Spurs
than once
game,
a fortnight.
Looked, it was too much for him.
So that's an issue.
For Bayern, yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. Do you think he'll go back to, the usual 4-3-3?
Well, he changed
4-3-3,
it against
or?
Bayern. He went back to 4, didn't he, halfway in the second half after the 3 goals. I mean, he seemed to actually look slightly
better. But
he picked
exactly the same team as he picked
he did
for
before.
Spurs.
Well, they were
he?
So good.
They were. Why not?
You know, so why not?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see whether who's on the bench. He seems to have a lot of faith in Gilmore. He seems to be presenting him as an alternative. And there is also, he's mentioned even the press conference today that Loftus-Cheek was about. Now, I'm really bemused about that.
Yeah,
I don't get that
at
all.
Very nervous about it, actually.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. But they're elite.
In the sense that he's not fit enough yet.
Well, he's also about half the size. It's absolutely bizarre. He was this huge hullet-like creature before, and he's now this slim, svelte, rather greyhound-like character. And you think, well, is, and obviously they've been
but you know,
checking him in training, so it might be that was the reason that he was injured.
Yeah, but I did say that, you know, because he was such a big unit.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, an Achilles injury, you know, I mean I'm not a doctor, Matt, but you know, it's a weight bearing.
It's associated with everything.
Issue,
Achilles,
isn't
it? Yeah, so maybe it's back as well.
Maybe like yeah. You know, lose the.
I remember Spackman had a terrible Achilles injury problem, and that was down to his back. It was established.
Yeah. And we know that Loftus-Cheek has a long standing back issue.
Back problem. So perhaps they're happy with his weight now. Maybe they might have achieved that. Being just see how it's affected him as a player.
I bet he's gone vegan, mate.
And as well.
I don't know, but I bet he has.
I bet he has. Yeah.
That's how I've become so svelte, like.
Yeah, you have, actually. Everybody in Radioland listening to this, Chidge is like a...
For those of you listening in black and white, I'm a lot less fat.
Yeah, he's a parody of his former self.
Well, I'm definitely a parody.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've ever heard it called that.
The good thing going into this weekend, gents, is that this is the first of five clubs that Chelsea play between now and the end of the Premier League season that are in the bottom five. So you're playing all of the current bottom five, which I think can only be a good thing. And when you look at the six-pointers still to be played at the do you not agree with that, Kidona?
Well, it just is the question of what they do. We've worked out that we can't... what are you showing me? The Premier League as it stands now.
It's in your running order, love.
What is?
The run-in.
Yeah, I know.
Shall I read it?
I don't need to have the run. I just wanted to say that...
You've committed it to memory?
No, I'm not caring about that.
Like
just
the bars?
It's already been established that we're playing people who are below us.
Yeah.
And the trouble is they will, if they play, if they park the bus, we've worked out we're not very good at scoring against
it. Yeah, but we're playing 1, 2, 3, 4 of them away.
Which this season would potentially be a good thing, right? Considering
because they win all the time.
Bridge.
Well, you hope so, yeah. Because they'll still park the bus even. Well, Bournemouth tend not to, but no, he's very, very strong. What's his face? My mind's gone. The manager,
Eddie Howe,
of defending really rather stoutly.
Yeah, Aki's back to
him. Yeah, and then they break, which is exactly has been our undoing all season.
Yeah, that's how they bossed 4-0, Matt. Last year,
yeah,
under Sarri.
Absolutely.
That was one of the nadirs.
Oh,
it was.
It was a very low moment.
I didn't just want him out. I wanted him terminated.
You wanted.
That was certainly a defining moment under Maurizio Sarri.
With sticks.
If we do look
apparently,
at that,
apparently now Juve, he's finding it difficult to get his message across to the players and getting them to play the way that he wants.
Did you
ever heard that before?
Did
anywhere?
You see him during midweek? Did you see him in the game in midweek against Lyon as he was coming out of his dugout and he had the... he wasn't just chewing gum, he had one of those proper fake cigarettes just sort of hanging at the corner of his mouth.
You know
when people
fake?
Have a cigarette, you know when they have a cigarette and they speak before they lick it?
Yeah,
it's
one
of my real bugbears. I can't take the cigarette out of your mouth and then speak to me.
Yeah.
But he kind of had that.
And he's sort of in the corner of his mouth, he's sort of chewing it like tobacco.
Really odd. Yeah. You look at that and you think, what are you doing? I mean, it's a real old school hark back, isn't it? That he has that, but you just think surely you can wait 90 minutes.
Do you know?
But he couldn't. He was just, that's why he was chewing all the butts all the way through the Chelsea games.
Matt, the players at Cobham, they hated it. They hated it because apparently Sarri would smoke. He had his little kind of domain at Cobham, you know, little space, and he and the coaches would congregate there, and they would all smoke. And these are athletes, highly tuned athletes. They don't like it.
No.
And he would smoke. Didn't give a damn about it, and they hated him. For that
madness.
Do you wonder
why
there's this issue with Sarri and the players? Because they don't want a guy who's sticking a smoke wandering around them all the time. And they did. They would stand. I mean, if you've been to Cobham, you know, there's a little balcony there, and they'd all be sitting there talking Italian, smoking their fags, and the players really didn't like it. There you go.
Well, if we look at the
plume of smoke came up
allegedly,
like the Pope, was it white smoke or?
Well, it should
smoke?
Be, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
At the other end of the table, gents, let's look at that. We'll move on from Sarri. We've stopped talking about Sarri.
We'll get hate mail. We don't want that.
We've spoken about playing the bottom five in terms of those in the top 10, I suppose you could say, from the Champions League spots down to 10th place, and those 6-pointers still to be played in the Premier League this season. Chelsea have the fewest. It's Sheffield United away from home and Wolves at home. So in terms of the run-in amongst all the other teams in that third to 10th
spot... Liverpool away, mate.
Sorry?
Liverpool away.
What's that for... That's...
Well, okay, no, I know what you're saying. You're saying that... Well, I think that's what my thing says here. The ones in yellow are basically those that are competing with each other for fourth place.
Yeah.
Right? But we've also got Liverpool away as the penultimate game of the season. If they're still going for their invincibles, then
sure.
God help us. I think the Sheffield United away match is the crucial match for Chelsea in the run-in
Because I was intrigued that they dropped a point. They dropped 2 points the other day.
Because Wolves,
because I thought they were doing wonderfully well.
Wolves might be, it might be done and dusted for Wolves by then. It might be too late for them to get in the top four. If Sheffield United are in contention, that's a real six-pointer.
Well, exactly, and that's why, for me, Liverpool, it's not a six-pointer, is it? Because they're top, they've won the league already.
It could be one that we lose.
yeah, absolutely.
I'm not convinced we'll do well against Palace.
But we've been saying this for weeks, haven't we? You know, there's me writing little yellow marks about the key fixtures against the competing teams. But at that stage of the season, there are teams fighting for their dear life, Matt, trying to not get relegated. And they are not, you know, we've got Hammers. We've got Norwich at home on the second. Well, they'll probably be down by then. But I mean, yeah, Palace, the Palace game. West Ham, they always end up playing like Brazil against
they
us,
do.
You know, for no, and then get walloped 6-0 by somebody the next week. None of these games are easy. And any team in this league is capable of beating the other team on any given day. Mm. That's why it's the greatest league in the world.
It is the greatest league in the world to some extent, but just not this season. It's been pretty horrendous, in my opinion,
well,
this
season.
Season
that Liverpool's going to win. It's horrible,
and apparently, fears from coronavirus mean that maybe the Premier League might get cancelled this year. What a surprise
this?
that would be!
Yeah,
quite incredible news. I mean, listen,
it's a conspiracy.
It's definitely
it's a conspiracy.
Who suggested that?
Yeah, it's absolutely not going to happen, is it? It's just another narrative to chuck in there. But the Premier League Hall of Fame is definitely happening. Inductees to be announced. The first inductees mid-March. We're asking all our fan shows who, if anybody, they'd enter in to that Hall of Fame. And I'm going to be asking Jonathan Kidd and Stamford Chidge that very question next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Chelsea fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast. Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd.
Beadle.
We're nearly at the end of the hour. It has flown by as it always does, gents. We've got about 12 minutes to go. Just very quickly, Omar B, thank you for your WhatsApp. Gents, he's raised quite an interesting point here.
From the start of the show
when we were talking about the game against Bayern Munich earlier in the week and we alluded to the fact that this was a young side. He said that Bayern team had a younger average age. Than the Chelsea team.
Thank you, Omar. In mitigation, I did mention that in the article, what I have written. And you're right. The biggest problem that we found was what, JK? It wasn't the youngsters, was it? It was the experienced players letting them down.
Whereas all the Bayern experienced players, if you look at Lewandowski and Müller, and who were the other? There were a couple
Thomas
of others.
Thomas Müller!
you had Boateng in there, Thiago came on.
Alaba.
They're all top players.
Yeah.
Whereas the difference is the Chelsea experience may have been top players, but aren't anymore. Whereas they've managed to maintain that level of competence.
And that's kind of the point I was making earlier on, was off on a rant. You know, there's that. We've got a mixture of promising, talented young players who are not yet at that level, and you wouldn't expect them to be. We didn't expect them to be as good as they have been in the Premier League this year, let alone the Champions League. And then the rest of them either were good once but are past it, or were never good enough, or will never be good enough. You know, I mean, Barkley, I'm sorry, he's now in the experienced player column for me. He is not a promising youngster. He's 27.
Mm-hmm.
27, mate. So,
this sporadic.
He gets away with it. People think he's a young player. He's not a young player.
He isn't anymore.
Tammy Abraham is 22. He's a young player.
To me, he hasn't got to the same level that he played at Everton once for Chelsea.
Ever. So, you know, him, Willian, I like Willian a lot, but he's woefully inconsistent. Pedro passed his best.
Oh,
Giroud
completely.
Passed his best.
Yeah.
Jorginho maybe not good enough at that level.
One of the others we were talking. Yeah, in fact, Jorginho was mentioned as one of the players to go.
Well, he's not good enough
because
at that
of
level.
It. Indeed,
he's
absolutely.
Never proved it at that
no,
level.
No, don't think he's good enough for Champions League
at
level.
At that level, if you want to go and win a Champions League, I don't think he's the guy that you know your
Kovacic
key player
is. Kovacic
potentially.
Yeah, I think.
But as I said, the key thing is to contrast that team we saw on Tuesday night
completely.
With the team that got knocked out by Atletico Madrid. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that team had four of the greatest Chelsea players. Good segue, Matt. Four of the greatest Chelsea players of all time. Nobody will remember. Jorginho will be a footnote on the footnote of the footnote of Chelsea's history in 50 years' time.
And on that note, Stamford Chidge, there we go. It's almost like we planned it. Brilliant stuff.
You're right.
And the Premier League have announced this week, haven't they, that there's going to be a Hall of Fame. This has gone mental all across the Twitter sphere, of course. Many arguments to be had over this one. The debate will rumble on until around mid-March when they announce their first inductees to this coveted Hall of Fame. We're asking all our fans who they would have. Now, in essence, I suppose this could be quite a short conversation, gents, because I imagine there are three names that I can imagine straight off the top of that list that will come out of your mouths. But let's discuss, in terms of Hall of Fame inductees from Chelsea, it's about, who are you going for?
He couldn't, for me...
How many are we allowed here?
Well, I'm going to choose one. I'm going to make it really easy. It's the easiest choice for any team in the Premier League. If it's not Frank Lampard. I'll eat this microphone. If we're talking Premier League, he is the greatest Premier League midfielder, certainly statistically, ever. There's no argument. You can argue about Scholes being a better passer, Roy Keane being a better fouler, Gerrard being a better leader, but statistically, no midfielder in the Premier League has scored more goals than Frank Lampard. Boom. Mic drop.
Mic drop rather than mic eat.
Can I throw some more people in just for the hell of it?
Well, it would be a bit boring if you didn't.
No, thank you very much. It would be a bit, wouldn't it? Yeah. And Didier, of course, Didier. I can call him Didier because I've never met him.
Didier,
I have. And I'd like to throw a sort of curved ball in here to
who
use
does
a
he
slightly,
play for?
Slightly baseball metaphor by suggesting Ruud Gullit. To me was a seminal signing for Chelsea, which set it all off. And another great player who should never have left was Arjen Robben, who was completely phenomenal for Chelsea in that season when they won. And Ricardo Carvalho, absolutely superb players.
He gets the Hall of Fame for the most Lord Percy lookalike player of all time in the Premier League.
So Ruud Gullit is...
Anybody gets that reference?
That fascinates me, that one. We're not back on the old eight. What was the Robotnik alien job one that I missed a few weeks ago? You two bamboozle me, by the way, with your comparisons. I can never quite get it.
Was it Dave Dido's Beaky McInchich? It was that one. It was Zabadak, wasn't it?
Something like that.
That's the Bonzo Dog Doodle band.
No, it's not.
Isn't it?
No.
Oh, okay. Please. That was similar. They were related.
That was in the canyons of your mind.
Oh, very probably. Yeah.
But Ruud Gullit. So you make, and this is the beauty of this conversation, is because we get these curves. Balls, as you said, that crop up. I would never have thought about Ruud Gullit. Now, when he came into the Premier League, having seen him in my time, in terms of my age, I saw him towards the tail end of his career in Serie A. Sampdoria, AC Milan, that's what I saw from Ruud Gullit. So for him to come into the Premier League, I was like, wow, this is one heck of an acquisition that Chelsea have managed to bring into the club. Of course, became the manager. But for you, he was a seminal signing because he was one of the first of his kind at that sort of new
Chelsea.
Yeah,
it was what he
represented Chelsea.
As well, yeah. And Hoddle was the manager at the time. And he was like a magnet. It was a statement about what the club was potentially going to become. And he was also absolutely brilliant for a period. He then got a little bit complacent, but I talk about men amongst boys, you suddenly realised what the standard was to aspire to when you had him playing for you.
Think about the context of what was going on here. 2 years before, Chelsea had Ian Porterfield as their manager.
Yeah.
You know, silence, exactly. You know, and suddenly we've got... I mean,
They won 2-1 at Spurs.
I was excited enough to have Glenn Hoddle manager, so I thought that was huge. Because I mean, I know he was Spurs, and it's, you know, you're not supposed to like anybody from Spurs, but he was one of my favourite players of all time.
He'd gone via Swindon.
Yeah, but he was one of my favourite players of all time growing up. He was a fantastic player. And then suddenly Hoddle brings in Ruud Gullit, and the whole... I mean, you know, you talk about how did Chelsea get to be where they are today. Well, that's probably one of the key moments in it. He signed Ruud Gullit, and then everything else started to fall into place. You know, the likes of Zola coming.
Petrescu.
Matteo. Fioli.
Yeah.
It all happened from that moment. Without Ruud Gullit, none of the rest happens.
He was talismanic.
It's like a power sliding doors moment, mate.
Yeah, it was.
None of the rest of it happens without Ruud Gullit turning up. Yeah.
Which is the beauty of this Hall of Fame that I do hope they recognise. I mean, I imagine when those first inductees, surely it's going to be Shearer, isn't it? Straight off the bat, which it should be.
Thierry Henry.
260 goals. But I do hope they look at those opening few years because the likes of Gullit, listen, Eric Cantona. I know he wasn't in the Premier League for that long, but...
Just for the karate kick alone.
Well, there you go. And the league were crying out for another mercurial talent.
For characters.
You know, Paul Gascoigne was in Italy doing his thing. They were desperate. English football was desperate for that. Definitely. And Cantona came in, was at Leeds for a short period, and then Manchester United. And the fact that he bought them their first title in 26 years, I think it's those types of players that I hope they
Leeds
look at.
Before, remember?
Yeah, absolutely, of course.
Oh, he has to be in it, Cantona.
Well, you'd like to think so, but mentioning Gullit, I think, is really, really good. And actually, didn't the club, when he first started, didn't he play in like a sweeper role at the time?
Yeah.
See, I I couldn't believe that. It almost looked like he was just chilling out, just eking Matt, away his days.
No, that was yeah. that was the kind of that was. What are you going to? No, he had this ability to. I was so bemused by it. He'd look up and beat players while looking around for the fact that nobody had made a run at all for Chelsea. You know, John Spencer, who was eager but inefficient, he'd point a kind of area for him to go into, and he'd look up and run completely the wrong way, and Hullett would just sort of. Hold on to the ball and then think, oh, well, I might as well. I'm in the penalty area now. He'd started off at the edge of his own penalty area, just gone, you know, sashayed through. I'll have a shot. And he'd shoot and either hit the bar or score. And you just thought, this man is just
He played everywhere.
Superior. He could.
Wherever he wanted to.
Absolutely remarkable.
I mean, you know,
he's my favourite player, Chelsea player ever. Yeah. Only for that, I have to say, for a season and a half. He then got a little bit slow, and then finally we had ridiculousness of him playing centre-half in the Arsenal game, where we lost 2-1, and thank goodness for Husey scoring in the last minute. Then we went back to the bridge, and he didn't play Hullett then. I think he then fell out with Bates, because he was modelling his T-shirts in the club shop as part of the deal, and Bates didn't like that. So he was then away, allegedly.
Okay, good debate, gents. I'm glad that we brought that up. Well, just quickly, before we end the show, sadly, finish on the game with Bournemouth tomorrow. It will be the fifth leap day match in Chelsea's history.
It is a leap day match.
Yeah. A fifth in history. The first 1908 was Sunderland at home. Won't remember that one.
Did we win?
The only one they won. Yes, 2-1 on that occasion. You had another in 64, Sheffield Wednesday away in the top flight. Lost that 3-2. 1992, Sheffield Wednesday at home. Lost that one 3-0. And this one, 2000.
I was there. I remember that.
Were you? Yeah. 2000 was Marseille away in the Champions League. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. No, I wasn't. No, someone that one. No, I was at PSG. No, I wasn't. Yeah, yeah.
Robert Pires with the only goal of the game on that day. So not a great record. One win and three defeats. Hopefully the boys can put it right tomorrow.
But it doesn't matter, because they don't exist, because it's leap year. So the date gets expunged from memory. So all those defeats don't count. I'll keep the Sunderland one.
Yeah.
How will it go tomorrow? I've got no idea, mate. I seriously have no idea. I mean, Bournemouth are rubbish, so we should win.
Well, they're not rubbish. They played very well last week. The ridiculousness of the referee not knowing the laws in seven of their last ten, mate. No, but they played very well last week, and they should have scored. Both those goals should have been allowed. Just absolutely ridiculous.
Hit him on the shoulder.
I mean,
they suffered from VAR almost as badly as we have.
Somebody's working out. We'd be second if all the VAR goals
exactly
had gone
that. We'd be 12, absolutely go- 12 ridiculous. Goals better off.
Yeah,
exactly that.
Yeah, indeed. Let's not get into VAR. We've only got a minute left, and I think we'll be here until the end of the night. I don't ever want to talk about it again. Gents, it's been nothing but a pleasure having you on the show. We'll be back next week at 7 p.m. on Friday to go through the action from tomorrow, and of course, the FA Cup fifth round clash with Liverpool.
We've got all about
two.
That.
Yes, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.